We're back on 3CR 8:55 AM on your dial. That was "Oh Mother, If the Heed Comes" by Abu Arab. Quite a mournful song and melancholic song that I think is quite important as we move into Ramadan, that we make full acknowledgement of the horrors still unfolding in Gaza that all Palestinian people face. We are now about to hop into an interview with Mary Merkinich. Mary, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jordan.
Okay, so just to give a bit of an introduction. So last Sunday, we recently had the kind of results. The results have come in for basically what would be the federal elections for Germany. And they have actually had quite a lot of interesting results in terms of for the left, but also some pretty scary results as well, with the Alternative for Germany, AfD, far-right populist party, basically being number two in the overall parties that contested the elections. So also with Mary's also had a bit of experience, had a bit of a history living in Germany, and was actually also an activist within Die Linke, the left party. And Mary's currently working on an article for Green Left, kind of reporting on the election results. So we would have a bit of a discussion with Mary, kind of unpacking the German election results. So yeah, good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Jacob and listeners.
Yeah. So just to start off, can you give us a bit of a background to this, to the elections in Germany? And I guess what were some of the political issues that were driving it?
Well, first of all, I think it's important also to say that there was a record number of Germans who actually turned out to vote, over 83%. So it was an election that most Germans felt was important. There was the good, the bad, and the ugly. The bad was the election of the conservative Christian right-wing party. That's the union of the Christian Democratic and the Christian Social Union parties, or the CDU-CSU, which I'll refer to just in shorthand from now on. The CDU-CSU, they won something like 28.6% of the vote. That was the highest vote that any of the parties achieved. The CDU and CSU, they are the parties that were led by Angela Merkel, who I think a lot of people will remember as a German chancellor. She governed for about 16 years. The new leader is a guy called Friedrich Merz, who was always someone competing with her from the right. The Social Democratic Party, or SPD, who were led this time around by Olaf Scholz, they'd been in power since the previous federal election, which was in 2021, and they had to form a coalition government with the German Greens, Die Grünen, and a small libertarian party called the Free Democrats, or the FDP. The German Greens, incidentally, are the most conservative Green Party in Europe, probably in the world. Anyway, and coalition governments are a very common outcome of German elections. Scholz served only one term by losing this current election. And the reasons are, there's a few. The SPD vote was down, and it's important to say that the SPD vote was down by something like nearly 10% this time. So the Germans were punishing the SPD for their performance in government. So their election result placed them third behind the extreme right-wing Alternative for Deutschland, or AfD, and it was their worst result in post-war history. Scholz has also been the most unpopular leader in post-war German history. The AfD had doubled their vote this time. So their vote is something like 20.8%. It went up by at least 10%. The AfD, just for people who may not know that much about them, is anti-immigration, strongly anti-immigration in a very nasty way. It's an anti-EU party, anti-vaccines, wants to take Germany out of the euro currency, and it's critical of NATO, which, as socialists, we might not be so sad about. Their leader, or one of their main leaders, is a woman called Alice Weidel. And she told reporters recently that she thought Trump was on the correct economic path by sacking public service workers in the US, and that if the AfD were in power, they would be doing the same thing. So I hope a lot of Germans were listening to that. She has also accused the CDU and CSU, and rightly so, of stealing many of the AfD policies, especially on things such as immigration and refugees. And she warned Friedrich Merz, the leader of the CDU, that if he continued with using their policies but at the same time flirting with or working with left parties, by which she was referring to the SPD and the Greens, who are hardly left, that their government would collapse. That's what she predicted. And just a bit further on the AfD, some sections are considered an extreme security risk by Germany's own security forces. And recently, a court ruled that one of its leading members can legally be described as a fascist. And the German parliament, until recently, the Bundestag, was considering banning the AfD.
I want to kind of jump into, though, into the next kind of question, because I actually want to kind of talk a bit more specifically, because you're talking a bit about the specifics of the AfD. I want to kind of hear about, you know, a bit more about the AfD in terms of, because I think the fact that they came in second place is actually representing a very scary rise in support for far right ideas. But also, but also there's also an element where we're kind of seeing this trend of growing kind of support for far-right ideas all across Western Europe. And one of the common trends that sort of links all these far-right parties is immigration, opposition to kind of immigration, especially of refugees. And I guess I want to kind of hear about can you tell us a bit more about that? How has, you know, the question of immigration become this contested and controversial debate that all the parties are even racing to the bottom to try and compete on it? And we even note as well that Die Linke also had a political split over this question of immigration.
Yeah, well, I think it's tied to two things. The old tactic of divide and rule. So focus the attention of working people on another group rather than those people responsible for problems in society. And so you divide the working class by saying, you know, it's your fellow workers who happen to be from a different country, or maybe not fellow workers, but people within the working class who may be unemployed and can't get work because they're refugees and not allowed to, or for whatever reason. So I think that there's the tactic of divide and rule, but it is also absolutely linked to the economic situation. And if you look at the election results, the AfD made their biggest wins in what was formerly the East German states. And those states are still much poorer than the West states. There's still a lot of inequality and a lot of resentment amongst the East Germans, who incidentally are often referred to as Aussies, and used to confuse me when I lived there because I would think they were talking about Australians, but it was a term for East Germans because Ost means East in German. So there's a lot of resentment, I think, to that, but more than resentment, people are actually suffering the consequences of, especially in recent times, the policies of the SPD. When Olaf Scholz and his SPD party came to power in 2021, they almost immediately doubled the military, the spending on their military budget. And it was the highest spending ever that a German government had spent on a military budget. And, of course, to pay for this, they had to make cuts. So just as Trump is making cuts to the welfare system and by sacking people in the US now, the SPD was making cuts to their welfare system and making working class people pay to fund their military budget. I'm sort of drifting a bit away from your question about immigration and refugees, but I think that's the answer, that because people were hurting so much, in West as well as in East, but as I said earlier, much more in the East, people, you know, look for someone to blame. And, of course, all the major parties were very strident in their anti-immigration, anti-refugee statements and focusing people's attention on refugees and immigrants as the cause of the problems in Germany.
Yeah, thanks for that, Mary. So one of the things that happened was this shock result, quite a surprisingly high vote for Die Linke. And this was actually seen as a bit of a conscious anti-fascist vote. Can you tell us a bit more specifically about their growth during this election?
Yeah, so this was the party's third best ever result. And it was more remarkable because the last time around in 2021, they had fallen short of the 5% threshold that parties or political candidates require to be able to be represented in the federal parliament. However, through all sorts of loopholes, because they had people in local state parliaments, they still had a few representatives in the federal parliament. So people, pollsters, etc., were predicting their demise. But then, because they redirected their energy into a very positive campaign, they were able to change their fortunes. And they campaigned on six major issues. They were, let's see if I can remember, social justice and a fairer tax system, gender equality, ecological sustainability, peace, of course relating to what's happening in Ukraine and to a lesser extent Gaza, because that's a big issue in Germany, not talking about it, education, and then finally equality between East and West Germany. And that last one I think was really important because, as I said earlier, the AfD got their highest votes in the old Eastern states. And that's because they focused on all of the issues that East Germans were concerned about. The high rents, spiralling prices, job losses, and unfair tax system, etc. And the Linke, Die Linke, had been for almost 2 years consumed by debates within the party rather than focusing outward. So once there was the split, they were able to focus back on what they should have been, which was trying to build their movement and address the concerns of working people. So they used those six issues to campaign around. But also I might just add that they benefited from a strategic voting around young and progressive voters who saw it as the only party that would never join a coalition with Friedrich Merz, the CDU, in other words, which is something both the Greens and the SPD are probably going to do. And they also pulled out some of their older party leaders, most famously Gregor Gysi. They called this campaign Silberlocken, or the mission of the Silver Locks, which I find quite amusing. And Gregor Gysi, if anyone has ever seen him perform, is just an outstanding public speaker and debater, and was someone that was looked to by many people, especially from East Germany, but he had sort of retired a bit. He's 77, I think, at the moment. But he and two other of their older members or leaders of the party rejoined the campaign, and that also helped reinvigorate the party. And of course, they did heaps and heaps of door knocking, which meant that they were actually connecting with people on the ground.
Yeah, thanks for that, Mary. As we move towards wrapping up the interview, we do have one final question for you. One of the outcomes that we actually saw among the youth vote was this polarisation of voting. There was quite a high proportion voting for the left and AFD. Can you tell us briefly, what this reflects about German society at the moment?
Well, I think it's all those things that I've already said, that there is an economic crisis, cost of living crisis, very similar to what's happening in Australia and I presume in many countries around the world. The US is another example. So people are fearing for their future. On top of that, of course, in Europe, you have the fear of the war in the Ukraine. Although what's happened in recent times in a couple of European countries, and Germany in particular, is that people see the spending on Ukraine as taking money away from all these other important issues such as social welfare, jobs, addressing high rising rents. And, of course, most people in European countries rent. They don't own their homes. So I think young people would have been looking at that and thinking about their future. And the only two parties that seem to have solutions, although I think in the case of the AFD, they're not solutions at all, in my opinion, obviously. And so that's why they were attracted to them. So there was a lot of opposition to more spending on the war in Ukraine, and the AFD has a similar position to Trump in that they say they want a rapprochement with Russia, and not to spend so much on the war in Ukraine, and the Die Linke were advocating for much more attention on those issues. As I said, a lot of their six campaign issues, social justice, fairer tax system, education, were issues that young people would also feel strongly about, but also gender equality and ecological sustainability. Germany has suffered quite a few ecological disasters in recent years, so I think they would have appealed to young people, and also the issue of peace. In fact, there was one member, or there is one member, I should say, of Die Linke called Ferhat Kozak. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that surname correctly, and I apologise for that. I presume he's a Turkish German, and he was one of the most outspoken figures on Palestine, and he was elected to the area in West Berlin. And it's the first time ever that an MP was elected from the Die Linke in the former West Berlin. So did I just answer your question, or did I forget?
You have. I think you've done an excellent job. I mean, as you said, I mean, your responses throughout the entire interview also contribute to it. So thank you so much for joining us this morning, Mary, on Green Left Radio on 3CR. Listeners, we will take a quick break, then we'll be back with Pages of Green Left.
Bye.